A dull November morning. In Birmingham's Winston Green Jail, two guards take the elbows of a bewildered young man and march him to the gallows. He is the last to be hanged in that place. This isn't ancient history. It's 1962. The young man is Oswald Gray. He's from Jamaica, and he's been in England for just 2 years. Not heard of this before? You're not alone. It's forgotten history. A bungled robbery, a single shot from a stolen pistol, and newsagent Thomas Bates lies dead in his shop in Lee Bank Road. The law rushes to punish Oswald Gray. 6 months do not pass from the crime to the rope. Young, black, and disposable, he is a victim of miscarried justice. His story shouts to us across the decades. Who killed Oswald Gray is a story that makes sure that neither Oswald nor Thomas will be forgotten. Episode 2: A gun, a villain, and a detective.
On the evening of Saturday, June 2nd, 1962, newsagent Thomas Bates was shot dead in his shop on Lee Bank Road. The next Wednesday, police, led by Detective Chief Superintendent Gerald Baumber, arrested 20-year-old Jamaican Oswald Gray, who went by the name Roy, in his dingy bedsit on Cannon Hill Road. The police found ammunition in Gray's room, but no gun. What happened? And what didn't happen? Over the next few days, sealed the fate of a young man who had been in the UK for just 2 years. 24 weeks after this arrest, at 8 o'clock on the morning of 20th of November, he was taken from his cell in Winston Green Prison. Moments later, he was dead. The last man hanged in Birmingham and the last black man hanged in Britain. The law rushed to punish Oswald Gray, young, black, and disposable. He was a victim of miscarried justice. His story shouts to us across the decades. This is episode 2 of Who Killed Oswald Gray? A gun, a villain, and a detective.
I'm Jazzy P, and I'm talking to John Berry, author of Who Killed Oswald Gray? So, John, Baumber and a couple of constables are in the bedsit. They find the bullets, and they're the same sort that killed Thomas Bates, or no?
That's right. Thomas was killed by a single shot from a Walter automatic, and that was the ammunition they found.
But he denied having a gun.
He did. And at that point, he told the first of the lies that did for him. He told Baumber that he had been in possession of a gun, but that he'd thrown it in the river.
So he did have a gun. Where did he get it from?
He'd stolen it a few days earlier, from the house of a Hamilton Backus in Varna Road, Borsall Heath. He'd become friends with two of Backus's sons, and that's how he'd come to be in his house.
And he eventually admitted to the theft to Baumber?
Correct.
And then he said he's thrown it in the river. Which river? The Ray, next to Cannon Hill Road? One of the canals, perhaps?
Problem. He couldn't remember which river. And within moments, he changed his story. He told Baumber that he'd hidden the gun under the wardrobe of a flat of a Mr. King, known as Parchment, during a party in Burberry Street in Lowe's Ells on the Saturday night of the murder.
And what made him change his story so quickly?
It's 6:30 a.m. in a clammy bedsit in Cannon Hill Road. A startled boy, barely awake, stands on the coal lino floor. The room is filled with three other bulky men. The imposing figure of Detective Chief Superintendent Gerald Baumber. Two impassive, uniformed coppers. He knows he is in trouble. He tells a stupid lie. He knows they know it's a lie. One constable takes half a step forward. Oswald has been here before. He changes his story.
So what happens then?
They go off to Burberry Street to Parchment's flat, and there, as promised, is the Walter automatic hidden under the wardrobe.
And does Grey admit to putting it there?
He does, but what he doesn't admit to is having the gun on the afternoon and evening of the murder.
So who did he say had it then?
Harris Charles Carniff, mover. Grey said that Mover returned the gun to him at the party and that he, Grey, stowed it under the wardrobe. He claimed that he sold the pistol to Mover, Cardiff, that afternoon in Pius's Cafe on Mary Street, Borstal Heath.
And does that sound likely?
No. The owners of the cafe, Cephas Smith and Ephedora Rose, both knew Grey and had no recollection of him being there that afternoon.
Which means the story of Carniff returning the pistol to Grey at Burby Street is unlikely to be true either. Were there witnesses to him being at the party?
Testimony on that, which we'll return to in a later episode, is highly unreliable. But on the balance of probabilities, and that's something else we'll return to, Mover probably wasn't there.
And presumably the police find Carniff slash Mover and question him about this.
They do.
And presumably Carniff tells them he has no knowledge of the gun or its whereabouts.
Exactly. And what's more, he tells them he'd had no contact with Oswald Grey in the days between the theft of the gun and the murder of Thomas Bates.
Bamber is convinced he's got his man. In common with what happens to Oswald over the next 5 months, things move quickly. He appears in court next day and pleads guilty to theft of the gun and ammunition. He denies any shooting. He is not sentenced, but is remanded in custody, awaiting further charges. There is no question of bail.
And it is while he's in custody there are more lies?
I'm afraid so. He now says that he spent the Saturday afternoon with a friend, Errol Thomas, known as Hercules. Thomas denies this when questioned. As to his whereabouts at about 6 p.m, the time of the shooting, he claims that he was having a drink with his father, Felix, along with Phyllis Shields, the daughter of the woman with whom Felix has taken up. It is another lie that will have disastrous consequence in court.
And what about Harris Charles Carniff, Mover?
Mover, you see. He make me laugh, you know. When him asks me, why Mover? It's simple. Keep moving my home. Keep moving my prison. Keep moving my life. Move my name too, if need. Courts, them get it right, of course. Harris Charles Carniff, born Jamaica, 1928. But newspapers, sure. Lazy reporter with clout ears. Them no listen carefully if it's no Simic, Brown or Jones. I can be anything. I can be Carniff. Carniff or Carniffy, and let me tell you, me happy enough to use any when it suit. Mostly though, I'm Mover, because I move whatever I get and whatever make me money.
Shields Daily News, Tuesday, 3rd July 1951. During a struggle in Tynemouth Police Headquarters, a coloured man charged with theft bit a police constable on the hand. Charged with him was Harris Carniff of Union Street, North Shields. Carniff, who denied the charge, was also sentenced to 2 months.
Manchester Evening News, Saturday, the 31st of December, 1951. alleged to have broken into a shop and stolen over 7,000 cigarettes to the value of £78, Patrick John O'Reilly and Michael Reynolds were remanded in custody at Salford today. Also remanded on bail was Harris Charles Carniff, aged 27, of Denmark Road, Mosside, accused of receiving some of the cigarettes. And I move out to the way of them up in North Shields, or Mosside. Get out of the way now, to Birmingham. It much better. I blend in. Handsworth, Lascelles, Basel Heath. Walk down New Street, Corporation Street, Soho Road. No heads turn, plenty under the breath insults though, but some friendlier faces, and plenty more like me. Find us, take us, move us. I find this boy is wry. I see myself like I used to be. Come, rob this shop, sell on these cigarettes, catch what we throw out to you. Put it in the bag and run. We'll see you all right. This boy have sly craft, but him no have no brains. Him no imagine for anything. He can't see the next step. This Rye, he'll be me good runner, me good carrier. I learn from the past. No more bill payments me can't make. No more 2 months, no more 3 years. Any time fi done, it's Rye can do it. Him keen. Him need the money. Just done youth detention. Him did force the meter in him daddy house. And you know what the man do? Him hand him son over to the law. Now the boy can't walk. Him not walk. Him daddy kick him out. And now him in a some pit in Cannon Hill. Just round the corner. From Hamilton and Conn in Varna Road. Hamilton, Uncle Hammy them call him, a him who have the pistol. A Walter, them soldier boy bring them back from the Germany war like a prize. Them no care who them a sell them to if them short of money. He can still shoot, still useful, just as useful for scare, even if them no shoot. I know it, Depp and Varna Road. Send this little boy if he fetch it. If he teeth it. Then we'll see if you have the nerve to use it.
Manchester Evening News, Wednesday, 16 July 1958. Claiming that he was duped by three accomplices in a shop-breaking offence, a 29-year-old Jamaican was jailed for 3 years at Salford Sessions, Bolton. Harris Carniff said in a written statement to the court, "My colour seems to have been against me."
So it looks more likely that Oswald, Roy, fell under the influence of this mover, even though mover consistently denied it.
There's no doubt in it. And as we'll see later, the presiding judge saw it that way too. You've got to remember this about Oswald. He was easily led. He'd been that way back in Jamaica, and he was the same here in Birmingham. He was a boy who was incapable of making sense of the world. He was barely literate, unable to hold down a job, unable even to stick to one alibi, and thoughtless enough to steal from his own father.
And in the language of the day?
Well, uncomfortable as it is, and it is, he was labelled backward, a backward child.
And for some, his way of speech served as to emphasise his backwardness.
You've got to remember that he came to England at 18 from Magazine Lane in Bog Walk, a relative backwater. He barely attended school, and his was still the speech of his local area. In court, he was constantly being asked to repeat himself. And it doesn't take much imagination to think of how impatient and how frustrated Gerald Bounder, the chief policeman, and his team would have become with him.
Detective Chief Superintendent Gerald Bounder knew Gray was stupid and easily coerced. He also knew that some of his colleagues would have been less than gentle in their questioning. But Gray was a grown man and responsible enough for his actions. By mid-July, Baumber was sure he had enough to make the murder charge stick. Gray had been found with ammunition and he knew where the gun was. He told lie after lie and had no convincing alibi. Harris Charles Carniff, Mover, may have been a small-time villain who would usually be an unreliable witness, but he was no murderer. Besides, unlike Gray, he had an alibi for his whereabouts at the time of the murder. He spent the day with two sisters, Valerie and Barbara Dolores, up in Moseley, something he told Bamba with a rude twinkle in his eye. What's more, local character Cecilia Gibbs had positively identified Grade in a lineup, and while she was certainly no angel, and in the past, Gerald had made small payments for her information, she had nothing to gain from telling such a lie. And so, in the second week in October 1962, Oswald Augustus Gray is charged with the capital offence of murder in pursuit of theft. Detective Chief Superintendent Gerald Baumber, Jerry to his mates, and soon to become Assistant Chief Constable, is certain that his evidence is enough to convict the hopeless specimen from Jamaica who so cruelly ended the life of gentle Thomas Bates 4 months previously. The law will take its course.
On the face of it, John, this looks pretty open and shut, doesn't it?
You've got to remember this. This is a capital trial. A man's life is at stake. To use the language that the lawmakers will use in the process, there must be no scintilla of doubt. Yet there remains significant doubt about the whereabouts of the gun in the week leading to the murder. And what's more, the law insisted that for a capital offence, the accused should not be suffering from, and I quote, any abnormality of mind, whether permanent or temporary. Was that the case with Oswald? And that's before we get to the layers of prejudice, and not just about race, that burdened the main legal decision makers.
I'm Paul Ferguson. My dad came to Birmingham from Jamaica in 1961. And like many who did so, he has no recollection of this case. Did Oswald Gray go to the gallows on the strength of evidence or just the balance of probabilities? What were the prejudices in play in the forces of the law? And how did the law fail a bewildered 20-year-old from Jamaica? Because, make no mistake, he was always a Jamaican in the eyes of the judicial system. In episode 3 of Who Killed Oswald Gray, we'll look at just how the dice were loaded against him.
You have been listening to episode 2 of Who Killed Oswald Gray, a gun, a villain, and a detective. You have heard the voices of Sue Brown, Jazzy P, Paul Ferguson, and the writer John Berry. Original music is written and performed by Anthony Williams and Sue Brown. Other music is supplied by Bloodline Music. The producer is Paul Toll, and I am Chicken George, executive editor. This has been a GCRB presentation.
Who Killed Oswald Gray is a Genesis Radio production, all rights reserved. For permission to use any part of this broadcast, contact the author John Berry at www.johnberrywriter.co.uk.